Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And we're going to have ourselves a wild time tonight. From the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway of the north, this is Safety Wars for Monday, June 3rd, 2024. Yeah, we've been gone a couple of weeks. The only, I'm glad to report that the only death in the family was my truck. So we're going to be getting a brand new used vehicle tomorrow. Like the way we put that. How's everybody doing? We are going to we're going to go and now we put together our usual the newscast with Oliver, right? So let's just break into Safety Wars news, and then we're going to go into our regular commentary and everything else. So, let's go see how this does. I'm a little bit rusty here, folks.
Welcome to Safety Wars news for June 3rd, 2024. I am Oliver S. Rodowisco. Here is some of the news from the Department of Labor that you might have missed over the last few weeks. The Department of Labor recovered back wages for 44 miners who were laid off and denied their last paycheck when their employer filed for bankruptcy. Multiple actions were taken against companies for child labor violations. This includes fines against three McDonald's franchisees in Kentucky for employing 305 miners illegally and a complaint against Hyundai's U.S. assembly plant for oppressive child labor practices. United Airlines was cited for safety violations after a technician's foot was crushed by a 737 tire. Additionally, an Appleton pallet manufacturer was found to have failed in training employees on machine safety, leading to a fatal injury. The department recovered back wages for 859 home health care workers in Texas who were shortchanged by their employers. An Illinois grain company was cited for safety violations after a worker suffered a partial leg amputation. The company had previous violations for similar safety issues. The department announced new efforts to combat exploitative child labor, including the creation of an interagency task force and a national enforcement initiative. The department resolved a labor rights issue at the Minera-Tizapa mine in Mexico, ensuring the reinstatement of union leaders. Three Rhode Island nail salons agreed to pay back wages and damages for worker retaliation and overtime violations. The U.S. Department of Labor has reached a settlement agreement with a New Jersey contractor after a worker suffered a fatal fall at a Bayonne worksite in October 2023. The settlement followed an inspection by the department's OSHA of Granite and Marble Services LLC of Linden after the Bayonne Police Department alerted the agency that a worker had suffered fatal injuries at a multi-unit residential building under construction. Acting Secretary of Labor Julie Sue today released the following statement on news of a final contract agreement between the United Steelworkers and Blue Bird Corp., one of the nation's leading manufacturers of low and zero-emission school buses. Congratulations to the United Steelworkers and Blue Bird on their dedication and perseverance in achieving a first contract. As President Biden and I have said, collective bargaining works. This agreement is proof positive that when workers and employers sit down at the bargaining table together, they can come to a deal that achieves stability for the employer and better and safer conditions for their workers. After severe weather and other natural calamities strike, the U.S. Department of Labor urges employers to clear debris, prepare homes, or provide other disaster recovery services to avoid using pay practices that violate federal regulations by taking advantage of the many resources it provides. While employers involved in disaster recovery are focused largely on responding to the needs of people in areas stricken when calm resumes, they cannot overlook their obligations to pay people fully and properly for the hard work they do, explained Wage and Hour Division District Director Michael Spear in Oklahoma City. The U.S. Department of Labor acts quickly to protect workers' rights to their full wages, protections, and benefits, and encourage employers and workers to contact us for guidance to avoid compliance issues. Recent devastating tornadoes in Oklahoma are clear reminders of the benefits of the Wage and Hour Division's Natural Disaster Compliance Assistance Toolkit. With downloadable information on preventing violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act, the kit focuses on the most common infractions by employers involved in disaster recovery, cleanup, and rebuilding efforts. Typically, in a disaster's aftermath, division investigators find employers not paying proper minimum, overtime, and prevailing wages, misclassifying employees as independent contractors, keeping incomplete payroll records, and using child labor illegally. The U.S. Department of Labor announced that the Mine Safety and Health Administration completed impact inspections at 15 mines in 11 states in April 2024, issuing 247 violations and 2 safeguards. An inspector issued safeguards due to site-specific standards at underground coal mines to address safety hazards related to transportation of miners and materials in haulage ways. Federal investigators have concluded that an Appleton pallet manufacturer's failure to train employees in machine safety procedures and ensure the procedures were followed contributed to the fatal injuries suffered by a 57-year-old employee struck by the carriage of a lumber stacking machine in late 2023. For Safety Wars, this is Oliver S. Rodowisco.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
Welcome to Safety Wars News for June 3rd, 2024.
Okay, we're back. For some reason, I just noticed I don't have any of the photos or anything that normally go up here. I don't know what happened today. We'll figure that out tomorrow. Anyway, we're still getting organized here and everything else. A lot of upheaval. We're turning over a new leaf. So this actually happened to me on Friday. Now you're going to say, well, Jimmy, why are we going to talk about something personal? What happened? So on Friday, I had to take my son to school. He's a local middle school. We end up going and dropping him off. I'm the way back. I'm going through the neighborhood, and I see this big commotion, right? This big, huge commotion on the way back. And, like, looks like it's a car accident of some sort. So I go up, and one of our neighbors, very nice woman from a very nice family, nice mother, she had dropped off her child and had turned around and proceeded home. Well, what happened was a dog who, and this is according to the statements that were made to the police, a dog who had a history of running out of a house, ran in front of the car, and was run over. Dog apparently did not survive. I mean, it was just horrific accident scene. If you ever been with that, I pull up on her and, you know, she's crying and I'm trying to comfort her. And then as usual, no one knows what to do. So, you know, I was afraid of her going into some kind of a shock. And then we have a human medical emergency. And then, you know, everyone's gathered around the dog. Nobody knows what to do. They call the owner of the dog because the dog was being house-sitted. And lo and behold, I said, look, I know what to do for a human being, right? A human being, it's 911 call. Get an ambulance here, try to stabilize the situation, do first aid. Here the dog, you know, there's really nothing you could do. They were applying direct pressure. Everything was going good on that. Owner of the dog pulls up, has some few choice words for person watching his dog, who was his sister, screaming, yelling, cursing, you name it. He was doing it. Very upset, takes the dog to the animal hospital and where it presumably passed away. Rest in peace. We'll see you on the Rainbow Bridge there. And the family is upset. I mean, it's a horrific, horrific, horrific situation here. Long story short, or short story long, as we do on Safety Wars. A school bus with young children. I believe it's like a 16... A long time on the school bus, like a 12 or 16 person school bus comes up yellow. And I stop the school bus. I say, hey, what's, stop. And the school bus driver looks at me. And she's like, well, I have children to pick up down this street. I said, well, can you go around the corner and like pick them up? I have children in here. I can't do that. I said, you know, we have a horrific accident up here, right here. Blood and gore all over the place. If you drive that school bus through that accident scene, I can guarantee you, you're going to traumatize these children. It looked like between, look, elementary school. Look like from kindergartners up to about fourth or fifth graders in here. And she's like, I can, you know, I said, look, you're going to have a problem here. Just go around somewhere else. If you're a couple minutes late, you're a couple minutes late, but you're going to have these folks traumatized here. And I said, look, a similar thing happened to me when I was about their age and never really quite got over it. And you know, the more I share this story, sure enough, I mean, this is a common story here where people don't get over this kind of stuff with death of animals. So cooler heads prevail. She turns around, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they, you know, then they get the children, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. So you're going to say, well, Jim, this is a horrible situation. So later that day, I had a couple of curiosities on here. And what I ended up doing was taking some measurements. And I want to show the kids what daddy does for a living. So we go in and we talk about, you know, this sort of thing with, you know, we take some measurements and I teach them timing and speed limit, and it takes about 12 seconds from a vehicle without accounting for acceleration to go from 30 miles an hour right to their house. It takes about 12 seconds. So it comes out to about 440 feet roughly. And, you know, with this and the impossible of the person was speeding is the bottom line. I've watched this person. She's driven my children. She does not jump, jackrabbit start here, right? She's nice and easy, residential neighborhood. Lo and behold, right now she's calmed down and everything else. Her husband came, thanked me today for, helping with the situation. And, I said, look, I do it for a stranger. Of course, I'm going to do it for a friend, sort of thing. But anyway, she says, what do you think I see on Saturday? Any guess? Slow. Children at play. Okay, great. I know under the law, you're driving a motor vehicle, you hit someone, or even if you're on a bicycle, which is not a motorized vehicle, usually most jurisdictions, you hit someone, chances are you're going to be liable. In this case, the dog saw a rabbit, jumped out of, they opened up a door, the dog ran out and hit, this is what was told to the police, and got hit by a car. Okay, out of nowhere, high bushes, no way you could see that. Now, my question is this, what was the root cause of that accident? What was the cause? The cause was, dog runs out of the house, sees a rabbit, they know that the dog has a history of doing this, right? So now they go and they put up, but that's not where the, and I'm sure that they told them multiple stories to the owner of the dog, because it was a one family member with the other family. You got to remain the family cohesion and unity in the family above all else, over the truths often, right? And so we have these signs, children at play, slow down. Great signs. Every neighborhood should have them. My question is this. You have a busy street. Why do you have little children playing in the street? This house, they have little children playing in the street all the time. Big, huge lots these houses are where the kids play on the street. We're not talking riding their bikes. Anything, we're literally playing on the street. So it would seem that their reaction to the accident, rather than let's try not to play in the street with multiple blind spots here, is put up a sign, and hey, now it's everyone else's fault. Is it a good sign? Yeah, we got one here. I put, me and my neighbor put one at the end of the block here because we have children that are in the neighborhood. Nobody's playing in the street, right? I can tell you that. We're on a dead end street too. Not likely to have all fast cars over here. How many times, right? Again, the victim is a dog. You can't blame that, but they're blaming the driver exclusively for this. Even the police didn't. How many times do we have an accident and we put up a sign and say, no problem. Our problem is solved. We're going to have awareness. We're going to put up a sign that says children at play. Well, sorry, guys. A sign does not go far enough. Is that a good idea to have it? Yeah, good idea. We have children in the neighborhood, blah, blah, blah. Well, I've also seen in our... I've also seen in our town, right, warning deaf child area, warning autistic child even, warning blind people in the area. I've seen those. Okay, there was a good alert signs. But how often do we, how often is a traffic sign ignored? Often. So you feel, I have a feeling that we're just going to put up a sign and the problem solved. I was in a doctor's office today at a medical clearance. Big sign. Use handrails. Okay, you're walking up a set of stairs and you have to tell people to use handrails? Really? Well, yeah, well, that absolves us of the guilt. How about with ladders? Why do we do monthly and weekly ladder inspections? Why do we have a competent person, a pre-user inspection on a ladder? One of the first things on a ladder and any fall protection checklist is make sure the labels are on there. Labels are important. Tell you all different kinds of information, but you're not allowed to use that thing without the label on there or the ladder. And why is that? People feel, especially with the ladders, if we take off all the labels off a ladder, we're not responsible for the way we use that ladder. And it absolves us of all responsibility. So my question to the people with this dog and who have their kids playing on the street, 4 or 5 year old kids playing on a busy street, wouldn't it be better just not have the children play on the street, especially when you have huge lots to play on? Because now you're going to be depending on the sign and for the drivers to see the sign and to know that there are children there. And also there is no posted speed limit anywhere here. There you have to know that speed limit 30, even though the road is nice and wide and wide open. And it's coming off T-bones on another street that people disobey the speed limits on that are posted. A lot of things going there. So especially with children. And we know how the visibility of a child in a car, when you're in a car is, especially if you have a big SUV, like I'm getting tomorrow, non-existent. So are these signs really going to do anything? Probably not. Are they going to make people feel better if something happens? Maybe. But ultimately, if you have a dead child in the neighborhood, and I'm sorry this is triggering for some people, signs aren't going to do anything. So what's my point? Okay, what's the point, Jimmy? Point is, look after your kids, number one. Number two, try to teach the kids, don't go in the street. And of course, if you have a special needs child, maybe that would be a better sign to put up there. And of course, put up signs, hey, we have children in the neighborhood, please drive slowly. And this is what we call safety. Safety isn't one point, right? Safety is multiple things. We already have a call in or an email in to the city. Maybe we can have some targeted enforcement for speeding in our neighborhood. That would be another one. Okay, so now let's go. We have signs. We're going to try to look after the kids a little bit more. We're going to maybe have targeted enforcement, maybe put up another speed limit sign. Watch our children, right? So they're maybe they're not outside, especially the younger kids who are playing in the street. We don't deliberately set up things in the street for them to play with, like soccer nets, right? Especially on a busy, dangerous street. And going on and on and on, trying to teach your children, train your children, and everything else. And we have enforcement of the drivers, maybe speed enforcement. And, of course, we have the legal system, and that's all ex post facto. That does really impact and on preventing things, causes more awareness, things of that nature. So that's the moral of the story here. And the other moral of the story is this. I called up the supervisor for the in charge of the bus here in town. And I said, maybe, perhaps, you want to talk to your drivers and let them know that perhaps it's not such a good idea that if you have a bloody accident, seem to drive through there with a truckload of vanload of people. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. So we're going to go and do our first commercial break. And then we will come back to you.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Okay, we're going to go to our regular OSHA type stuff. Yeah, I am using the old software. Sorry, folks. Been a while, and I didn't want it to just go and... I just didn't want to go and with the new stuff and everything else. So here we go. All right. And here we have a story from federal judge affirms 2022 citation penalty against United Airlines for failing to protect employees seriously injured when a 737 crushes the foot. We had this on Safety Wars News here. Federal administrative law judge has affirmed safety violations against United Airlines related to a 2021 incident at Newark Liberty International Airport in which a 737's tire crushed a technician's foot as they worked with one of the company's towing crews. So basically, this was a general duty clause violation, and it has a proposed $14,500 penalty, which was the maximum at the time of the incident. Agency investigators determined United Airlines violated federal regulations by failing to follow its own policies and procedures for towing a plane safely. United Airlines could have prevented the employee from suffering a debilitating injury had the company followed its own safety procedures. So this is one of those things where the company had a written safety procedure, all right, had a written safety procedure, and just neglected to follow that safety procedure. One of those things with that. And let's go To our next story. Here we have a federal investigation into workers that finds Appleton pallet manufacturer, always in Wisconsin. Stuff going on in Wisconsin. The Appleton, and this is not showing up. Give me a second. All right. Federal investigation into workers that finds Appleton pallet manufacturer failed to train employees and address machine safety hazards cited in 2019 OSHA investigation. So, federal investigation. Why were we hearing this from? Okay. When did this happen? Last year. So, federal investigators have concluded that an Appleton pallet manufacturer's failure to train employees in machine safety protocols and ensure the procedures were followed contributed to the fatal injuries suffered by a 57-year-old employee struck by the carriage of a lumber stacking machine in late 2023. Investigators with U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration responded to a report of a worker fatality at a wood products company on December 5th, 2003, and learned the company had not made sure the machine was locked out. And going on here, and let's remember here, they've been added to the Severe Violators Program. Let's look at that thing. Here we have the citations. Citation 1, item 1A, type of violation serious. The employer must ensure standards here have a minimum tread depth of 9.5 inches. So what it comes down to is that something didn't look right. OSHA went out and broke out the tape measure, measured it. They did not have a minimum tread depth of 9.5 inches. Right, $88,873. I tell you what, if OSHA breaks out the tape measure, you got a problem. I don't know. I hope you would agree there. Now, it's important to remember that if this is the issue, you have to go out there with your own tape measure and take the same measurements here to verify this. Citation, there's many citations here. But citation 1, item 1B, the same thing related to that. Here we have. Each walking working surface with an unprotected side edge that's 4 feet or more above lower level has to be protected. Something with fall protection, railing system, something. $7,000 fine and change. Citation one, item 3A. Lockout tagout issues, $8,800. And more lockout tagout issues. Next one. We got like 50 pages here. I'm not running through all of them. Training on the equipment for lockout tagout. $12,421. Citation 1, item 5. Employee alarms in there above need to be loud enough to be above the ambient noise. $8,800. Citation 1, item 6. Missing guarding. Extensive in here. They have a whole list of things. $12,421. Okay, guarding on a saw blade, $8,800. One of my clients, I got called in after the fact, was they got nabbed for one of those, right? Older machine. They likely got it at some kind of auction. Right, estate sale auction. Phenomenal working machine from the 1960s. Still worked well, but guess what? No guards. It was BO before OSHA. I said, look, you got to get out of there. You got to get that out. Well, it still works. I said, well, if it still works, retrofitted with guards in accordance with OSHA. But the things that we only paid $25 for it. Well, you're talking thousands of dollars in guards. I said, yeah, probably. Got to get rid of it. All right. And let's see. Anything else? Oxygen cylinders being stored next to highly combustible cylinders. $8,873. Here we have Stuffing blocked, right? Unused openings and boxes, raceways, auxiliary gutters, cabinets, equipment cases, or housing shall be effectively closed. It's electrical. Guess what? Can't have those punch outs exposed. $8,800. And citation 2, item 1, this is serious. Repeat violation. Fall protection, 4 foot or more. Remember, general industries. Citation 2, item 2, repeat. $24,842. That was lockout tagout violations, right? And there's some more. Here we have things not kept in a clean, orderly, and sanitary condition, $7,098. And we have another one. Only approved containers and portable tanks shall be used. Metal containers and portable tanks meeting the requirements of and containing products authorized by the regulations issued by the Hazardous Materials Regulations for Department of Transportation shall be deemed to be acceptable. Diesel fuel used to lubricate the resale was not in an approved metal container. The diesel fuel was in a plastic squeeze bottle with a yellow top. Really? Like a mustard container? Yeah, it's a transfer container. You know, I think I would be able to argue that one. It's a transfer container, but I don't know. Wasn't storage, just for immediate use. I'd probably argue that, but I probably would lose. Okay, here it is. This is, again, related to the one before. The container shall, every container of hazardous chemicals in the workplace must be labeled, tagged, or marked with product identifier and words, pictures, symbols, or combination thereof, which provide at least general information regardless of regarding the hazards of the chemicals. Again, no money on that, but related to the first one, no confined space entry attendant, confined space entry assessments, $8,800. And no communication to those employees of confined spaces, no confined space entry program, and another one. I mean, you know, I don't know what to tell you on this one. With this. I mean, it's pretty sad in a way. You know, again, 2024, middle of 2024, we're still not getting it with this stuff. I'm going to share this that one to my social media one right now. And we're going to go to commercial break.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
So I'm on, you know, all different types of social media platforms here. So, no, I share things. Just check things out on LinkedIn and Facebook.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Poelzel, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now, he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all. With his engaging storytelling and expert analysis, Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Poelzel and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
You are listening to Safety Wars. Tomorrow's safety today.
Okay, here we have our next story. It's out of Willard, Ohio. Department of Labor cites a leading tool equipment manufacturer after maintenance electrician suffers severe burns in electrical arc fire. One of the world's largest and best known tool and equipment manufacturers could have prevented a 29-year-old maintenance electrician from suffering severe burns during an electrical arc blast at a company facility in Willard, if required safety standards were followed, a U.S. Department of Labor investigation has found. An arc flash occurs when an electric current travels through the air from one conductor to another or to the ground. These flashes can produce temperatures over 35,000 degrees Fahrenheit and can cause serious injury and even death for nearby people. In response to the employer's report of the workhouse's hospitalization, OSHA opened up an inspection at the products company operating as Stanley Black & Decker on December 20, 2023. Hold on, everybody. I have a request from somebody. Hang on. We do this in the basement. So anyway, hold on, it's Jessica. Hang on one second.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system.
Go out. Okay, and I'm sorry, I think I turned this down. In the residential world, again, let me start again here. And we're going to conclude with this. So this is on a piece of property that my family used to own, or not my family, my extended family. And this one was that the company had no tie-offs and stuff like that, fall protection issues. People fell from here. Another one. All right. This is another issue here. This is why you got to have your stuff together. The property was sold, all right? However, my family member, OSHA, still made an inquiry, and other agencies made inquiries, and attorneys made inquiries as to whether or not he actually owned the property still. And again, he referred it over to the attorneys and who have the power to be. Yeah, he doesn't own the property anymore. But again, let's say the OSHA investigators are there, and now it's an adjacent piece of property. Now you're open game. It's in plain sight, whatever they see, right? So if you're working next to a company that you know is not working safely, guess what? You better make sure your act is together, and you had better make sure that it's clear that you don't own the property. Because as we know, that again, this is Jersey, right? Anything is legal as long as you don't get caught, as Bob Dylan said. You
So there's a real estate deal done, right? Things are in there. And they say, you know what? You could start doing work anyway, even though the real estate deal is not done. It happens for one of my clients without fail, almost every project they're in for commercial properties. Yeah, the deal's not done, but we're starting construction. Now you muddied the waters if you have any ownership with that company or any liability with that company if there's an accident on the job. So this is the kind of stuff that you need to be aware of here. So if you own a piece of property, you're in the middle of selling it, it may not be a wise idea to tell the buyer to go and start working on it. And it happened last week on a project that I was involved with. Like, oh yeah, we're doing this, and this, but the people paying for it didn't actually sell it yet. Like, really? Okay. So here we have the employer used forklifts to support the scaffold platforms, ensuring that the entire platform, without ensuring the employer entire platform was attached, right? $4,800. So they put a scaffold on a forklift and then raised the thing with the forklift. I don't know if anyone was on it, but that's what they did. Here we have, again, 6 feet or higher. You got to have some type of fall protection. The employer did not ensure that an employee was protected from falls. An employee engaged in delivery of materials, which included but was not limited to countertops and sinks to the fifth level, a multi-unit residential building, was not using any means of fall protection while guiding a JCB model 5860TC telescopic handler, a.k.a. Class 7 forklift, a.k.a. colloquially known as a LUL, up to the building to unload the materials and when unloading the countertops from a rack that was lifted up. So here you had a roof or an upper level, and you're guiding it up. And the employee is right on the edge, probably guiding the thing. Again, not very good. They caught someone doing this. Again, if you know that there's a fatality, and no, again, this is education also. If you know that there's a fatality and OSHA is coming, why would you do this? I'm not telling people how to get out of an OSHA citation, but it would seem to me that I know a regulatory agency is coming. Maybe I shouldn't do illegal stuff. I don't know. That's me. You know? Here we go. The employer did not ensure that an employee was protected from falls. $4,800. Modifications or additions would affect the capacity to safe operation of equipment were made without the manufacturer's written approval. The employer did not ensure that a working platform attached to a telescopic handler, a.k.a. Class 7 forklift lift, a.k.a. LUL, had the manufacturer's written approval prior to use by employees. Employees engaged in delivery and installation of materials included, but were not limited to countertops, bathroom sinks, and kitchen sinks at the fifth level of the unit residential building work from an unauthorized work form attached to the works. Again, if you're going to put stuff on a forklift, that's a man thing, carries people, you got to have some type of written something. Right? Why they didn't do it, I have no clue, but they just didn't do it. And what's the grand total here? $19,356. A person was killed. I'm sorry. Person, there's a fatality at work. We have basic safety issues not happening. Basic safety stuff. And you got a de minimis. I'm sorry, my opinion, de minimis, fine. Now, part of this is the strategy that I have been told by OSHA inspectors at outreach training classes and other training classes at Rutgers. Now, sometimes it's a strategy to have a de minimis OSHA violation and fine to get the company to just sign off, and then that is used against them in a court of law if there's going to be a lawsuit, right? Or any type of litigation of some sort. Okay, maybe that's what the strategy was here. Fair enough. But anyway, that's what I got for tonight. I just wanted to thank everybody for tuning in again, hanging in there with me. And I look forward to giving you more regular programs. And yes, we are working on the background here. All right, we got some plans going. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel, and we are going to go to our outro here. Let's see how we could do this. Oh, we're just going to do this the old-fashioned way. We're going to hit a button.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.